comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful planet. Thanks for being here at the show. I know you could be doing a million other things, and you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. I appreciate it tremendously, and I want you to know that I appreciate it. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. We have a lot of stuff coming up here at the Kevin Smith Show, lots of great stuff coming up, and you don't want to miss out on any of it. The Alternative Universe Eye Conference is coming up April the 21st, and the tickets are on sale now, and they are selling every day. You want to be sure and get yours. It's only $10 to attend this conference, and you don't have to go anywhere to do it, except to wherever your computer sits in your home, because you don't have to go to the conference. The conference comes to you. It's not pre-recorded. It is live, and we've got some fantastic presentations and presenters coming up. We're going to have, in addition to me, and I don't include myself in the fantastic, I'm just included in the program, but we've got Adam Gorightly, we've got William Michael Mott, we've got Don Ecker, we've got Nick Redfern. $10, folks, $10, and it comes to you live. And there's a question and answer period after each presentation. So it works just like if you were in a conference hall somewhere, but you didn't have to pay an exorbitant sum for tickets. You didn't have to buy tickets to ride an airplane out to wherever the conference is. You didn't have to rent a hotel room, and you didn't have to pay for extra meals out there, wherever there would be. All right, so we're trying to make sure you get the pleasure of being at a conference. You get the information. You get to talk with the speakers and ask your questions. And nobody is, there's no highway robbery in it. $10. So click where it says Alternative Universe Eye Conference on my website and get your ticket, all right? The K-Files is free for everybody. It's our free weekly newsletter, and if you're not getting it, you ought to subscribe. There are a number of people in this last K-Files, there were a number of people who had not, either they had not or had not been able to activate their subscriptions. I sent them the K-Files with a notice at the top and told them how to activate their subscription. And so if they do, they'll start getting the K-Files, and if they don't, they'll be cleared out of the list. So if you got one of those, be sure you, and you want the K-Files, be sure you do what it says at the top and activate your subscription, okay? Our members community has a big event coming up as well. That will be the seminar that I'm giving away free to our members, a live seminar. That's coming up this month, and you have to be a member in order to watch it. But if you are a member, then it's free for you, okay? Absolutely free. It's my way to say thank you for supporting the show. If you're not a member, you can fix that tonight by joining. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is someone I think you're absolutely going to be delighted to hear. Here on the Kevin Smith Show, you have heard two different explorers talk about their expeditions to a legendary time portal, or perhaps it's a dimensional portal, located in southern Arizona, right near the Mexican border. That would be Jerry Wills and Bill Riley. Now, with both of them, there is a common thread. And the common thread is that they both heard about this time portal from someone who is a treasure hunter, prospector, explorer for many, many years, and is himself legendary. His name is Ron Quinn. Ron Quinn originally is from New York City. He left New York when he was 14, I think, and wound up doing several jobs and stint in the Army. And then he and his brother, Chuck, went down to Arizona, and they lived out in the wilderness. Sometimes it's desert, sometimes it's scrub brush, but out in the wild, in the wilderness, for 2 years, intense, while they explored and prospected, and while they learned what was out there, learned the lay of the land. And during that time and in the decades following, Ron has explored most of the desert and mountains in that area of Arizona and has discovered many of its mysteries. And we are delighted to have with us tonight Ron Quinn. Ron, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. It's a delight to have you here.
Thank you, Kevin. Nice to hear from you.
All right, now let me check before we go any further, because we had to do this two different ways today to get the audio just right. And so let me check. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, outstanding. Ron, I've just told people a thumbnail sketch of how you wound up down in Arizona. And I want to address one thing before I turn you loose to talk to us. You did a stint in the U.S. Army, and I want to thank you for your service.
Hey, thank you.
All right. Now I'll turn you loose to talk to us. You wound up in Arizona. You're out in the wild in the tents. What's going on?
Well, when I was over in Germany, my brother bought this book on lost treasures from Desert Magazine, and he was so involved in it and wanted to go down here. He asked me when I got out of the service whether I'd be willing to come with him for a year or two into Arizona to search for some of these treasures. And I said yes. And after an hour, after about, must have been a little over a year, we saved enough capital and went out and bought a 1955 Willys four-wheel drive wagon. And away we came. My mom was sitting at the door saying, "Oh, God, there goes my sons again. What's going to happen this time?" So as we arrived here, we went right to Aravaca, a little mining town close to the border. About 70 people live there. And we branched out from there into the Tumacacris, the Atascos, running down all these treasure sites. Of course, we thought, like all the other greenhorns, you know, we'd find this one day, this one the next, which never happened. So, all about the second month, we met a fellow by the name of Roy Purdy. He was a merchant marine, and it was instant like between us. So, he decided to move in with our camp there, and he was a merchant marine. He stayed with us for 3-4 months and go out in the high seas for maybe 3-4 weeks or a month, and he'd come back again. And somewhere along the line, we met Walter Fisher. He was a lawyer from Chicago, and it became a friendship and a partnership that lasted over 40 years.
Okay, now let me stop you right there and ask you, before we get too far down the road, when you decided to come with your brother, this was his idea originally, and you decided to come with him down to Arizona, and you went right to Aravaca. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you go to Aravaca?
Because the treasure book he had written by a famous John D. Mitchell, his name was, he wrote for Desert Magazine, And then he decided to put all his stories into one book, which my brother saw advertised in Desert, and he sent for it. And most of the treasures and lost mines and bandit loot was buried in and around Aravaca, say a 20 or 30 mile radius. So we figured we'd start there first. So we pulled into town and we went to the post office and told them to hold all our mail under general delivery. And away we went, and within about 3 days we met Louis Romero. He was the chief cowboy of the Aravaca Ranch. And he'd stop by if he had the time, and he'd tell us the history of his area and stories he heard from his father and his grandfather. They weren't all on treasure. They were just the history of the area. They were fascinating. So one day, after we met Roy and Walt, four of us went down to Aravaca, and from Aravaca down to Nogales. And on the way back, it wasn't a superhighway then, it was two lanes, we passed this old Indian, a Model A, and he had a blown tire and no spare. So we turned around and picked him up, brought him up to the Kinsley Ranch, which is now called the Cow Palace, fixed it, mounted it, and he thanked us, and we bid him goodbye and left. It must have been maybe a month later, we saw this cowboy coming into our ranch, and by golly, it was John, the old Indian. He recognized us. He said he was working for the ranch there, checking the fence line, making sure the gates were closed. And he spotted our metal locators. He says, oh, you boys looking for treasure. I said, yeah. One thing led to the other, and he says, I'll tell you a story. He says, it's never been told outside the tribe. I says, well, why are you telling us? He says, because you befriended me on the highway. When you meet these old-timers, especially the Indians, don't cast off all the stories as just a hoax. You know, they're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So he told us about some Indians that are on their way back from a hunt, and they came across this flat mesa, a plateau, and they saw this natural archway. They started chasing each other through just for fun. One jumped through, never came out the other side. So they went ballistic, went back to the medicine man in the valley below where the village was, and they came up and they threw rocks through it. Nothing happened, and an old Indian woman came by, and she had a live rabbit. Threw it in, it disappeared. And they all backed off, and I think they started calling it Doorway of the Gods or something. So I told him, I said, well, we spotted that, I said, about a week ago, coming down from this high hill, and we saw it all in the distance. He said, well, did you go over to it? I said, no, it just was an oddity of nature. We looked at it. And then he says that he was up there one time, oh, I guess in the mid-40s, and a big storm had come in, and the sky was black from horizon to horizon. And as he rode past the archway, he looked through the opening. Now, the mountains on the other side were the same, but the sky was blue. He looked around the corner of the archway, and there was the dark clouds. He got scared and rode on. And while we were there, we heard all these strange stories of conquistadors being seen on horses, you know. But no one tied the stories to the archway because no one knew the story about the archway.
Okay, so you were hearing stories from the locals about that at various times they had seen conquistadors?
Right. The Lopez boys, there were two of them out looking for a sick cow, I think. And one looked toward the south, and he saw these four or five riders at a single line heading east. And he looked through his field glasses. They were Spanish conquistadors. The breastplates, the lances, the helmets, the whole thing. They were heading toward Tubac, which was a presidio for the Spanish in those days. So he watched them for the longest time. They shimmered and disappeared. A rancher, without checking something around the water tank by Murphy Well, and he saw this padre in black robe, flat hat, you know, crossing over the wash. You can see his shadow. You see him kicking up the dust. As he reached the other side, where a mission was there at one time, it was called a what's the name now? It's a small mission. It just escaped me. Well, anyway, he saw him as he came out of the wash. He shimmered and disappeared. So something was going on. The place is like a freak of nature. When everything comes together at the right time, something happens. It spreads out maybe 50 feet to a mile. So after hearing all these stories, we went up to it, the four of us. And, of course, I didn't jump through the archway. Roy was with us, and he heard all these stories of the ghostly seas and everything. He says, "Don't fool around with something you don't understand." So I was standing there, and I put my arms through and acted like someone pulled me through. Well, I thought old Roy would have a heart attack. He cussed me out, called me every word he could lay his tongue to. So we gathered up geodes, fire agate, or fire opal, thunder eggs, all these actual pieces of nature. So we brought them back to camp. Excuse me. We brought them back to camp, washed them. Some were big, some were small. And we went back up another time and gathered up a whole pile more. And then we told Louis about it. He said he had seen the archway for years and years, but never heard the stories, hardly. So we went up there again, and lo and behold, the archway looked different. There was something about it, like it was maybe kind of want to shimmer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they left, came on back to camp, and so, oh, I guess we waited a little bit longer. We went up there again, and nothing was going on. But Louis says one night he was camped about half a mile from the archway, and he heard these wild horses. There were wild horses there at one time. He said it was nightfall. We were getting ready for roundup. He says the boys, they call them, were camped around the saguaro and down the wash. And all these horses started getting closer and closer. They heard them winging. They heard them hitting rocks, you know. And they got right on top of them, and they all dove for cover. But as the sound reached the edge of the wash, it abruptly ended. So that happened. And Louis says there was a fellow who used to come in October, and he was treasure hunting. And he says he'd see him in the camp. He wasn't too friendly. He'd come in when it cooled down, left when it got hot. And one day came by, and the horse was there, and the old-timer wasn't around. He'd never been seen to this day. He vanished. Never found a body, never found a solitary thing. And he was close to where the archway. He might have been up there and figured it was something that the Spanish had built, maybe to tell about, looking through it and see where a treasure is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he just completely vanished. And then there was a camp we came upon, again, close to the plateau. And it looked like someone had walked away from it, say, excuse me a minute. Like someone who had walked away from it, never came back. There was old clothing there, there was drill steel, there was shovels, picks, everything. All inside this big hole he was digging into, shaped like a horseshoe. It went in, dropped down about 10 feet, came back around, and came back out about 40 feet from the original hole. And he completely vanished. Now, if he was an old-timer, let's say he was died, you know, then the predators would have made a short meal of him real quick. But all these stories keep popping up all the time. There was a group of kids that came in about 6 months later. They had Mitchell's book. They were looking for the lost treasure of Critter Canyon. That's well known.
Mm-hmm.
And we had searched for it for several months. We know the location where it should be, but that's all. And no one could find Corita Canyon. So Louis told us one time, he says, "I know where Corita Canyon is." He says, "You boys meet me over by Cedar Wells," he says, "and I'll show you one area that's known as Corita Canyon." I said, "Well, if you heard the story, then you look for the treasure?" He says, "Louis never looked for that. I don't make believe, you know." So we met him by Cedar Springs, went on down to this big flat, and there was this big canyon. And he says, right here was the remains of the old Corita. The Corita was a big ox cart with heavy wooden wheels, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The oxen would pull it. And they were leaving from Tumacacri Mission. That's where the mountains got its name. And during the big rebellion of 1751, the Indians went on a big war with the Papago and the Pima, I think. And the Padres hid all their gold they had been accumulating for about 100 years and fled to the coast. And these treasures had never been found. There's rumors one or two of the small ones had been discovered. So I told them, I says, well, I says, it's all over there in that flat, I says, right below that Dick's Peak. He says, oh, yeah. So they found it. And it must have been a week later or less they came driving out. And they says, boy, that's one weird place. I says, what do you mean? He says, we were sitting in the tent one night, it's similar to our 9x9 tent, and it sounded like rain coming down. And they stepped outside, and oh, there were hundreds and hundreds of the little stones. They gave us some that looked like with a hematite ore. And he says, as they stepped outside, he says, they started raining down from the sky again. Now, there's no cliffs around there. It couldn't have fallen off a cliff. Now, something happened, bringing in this crazy archway again, that set these things flying, and they were all over the place. There were hundreds of them. And the main thing, he says, when we were there for a week, I knew what they were going to say. He says that that's a strange place. He says, when we got there, we had a feeling that we're always being searched and looked at, and people were hidden out there looking at us. He says, it was a very strange feeling. So we told him about the archway, and he says, yeah, he says, well, we have to go back and see it. I says, I've only told about three groups where it is, because I do want a whole bunch of people running up there and spray painting the rocks, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So we told them approximately, but they never came back. And then I met these two brothers, and they seemed real honest, so I told them where it was. They've been there 6-7 times. Jerry's been there once or twice. And Bill was there once, I think, with his wife.
Yeah, Bill Riley.
Yeah, Bill Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the 2 years were up, I came down on my own. I just couldn't stop and go back to work after 2 years of a wild adventure. And I mean adventure. We never, never lived the same day twice. Every day was a great adventure. Someone we would meet, a story we would hear, a big cave we'd find way on top of the mountains that even Louis didn't know about. We found an ancient wall, took a picture of it, went back in 91 with another friend of mine, took a picture of it from the same spot. The thing had changed. I'm talking tonnage. Someone had taken the dog leg out and straightened it out from this big boulder.
Now, all right, we have to step away for a break. So we're going to do that, and we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this.
Oh, this is Vegas Gary. Listen, we got aliens here taking all our money and the people that come into this town. They leave broke. I need you to investigate them. Call me. Hey, 70. If they haven't got me yet, please help me. See you, Kevin.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are talking this evening with Mr. Ron Quinn. He is living history of one of the most mysterious areas in the United States. Certainly not the only mysterious area, but it is without a doubt one of the most mysterious areas, and that is in southern Arizona. And if you have a map of Arizona, or pull up a map of Arizona, look for Tucson, and then go south, I think it's what, southwest to Aravaca, right?
Right.
Yeah, and Aravaca would be right down next to the Mexican border. And all that area out around Aravaca, you know, we refer to it as the desert. And part of it is desert, but part of it has some scrub trees and stuff like that, but then part of it's pretty barren, too. I can tell you this, regardless of which of those areas you're in, you're in the northern suburbs of hell in summer. It is hot. It is really hot. And Ron, are you still kicking around out in the desert and exploring these days?
Oh yeah, not as much as I did. I'm pushing 80 years old.
Uh-huh. So you're...
I keep myself in remarkable shape. They say I look like I'm about 60 or 65 or something.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of you now, and you don't look like you're anywhere near 80. But you're able to handle that heat out there, huh?
You get used to it. It takes a couple of years to get acclimatized.
Well, let me tell you something. I lived in Phoenix for 6 years, and I didn't get used to it. I hated every day of every summer. I absolutely hated every day of every summer. I did not get acclimatized.
Uh-huh.
But I will tell you this. When the fall comes, and it comes late, but when the fall comes and that heat breaks, it's paradise all the way through winter. Fall and winter, it's fantastic out there.
Spring is pretty good, too, springtime. That it warms up off quick.
Yeah, like one day it's spring and the next day it's 110. Yeah,
uh-huh.
It goes quick. But
yeah.
I lived in Phoenix and Glendale and Mesa.
Oh yeah.
And then I had had enough. So
anyway,
okay. So
let me describe the country that the plateau is in.
Okay.
And you'll see why it's kind of strange there. You go up this canyon and it turns, makes an abrupt right turn, or left and then right again. And there's a big slope, and you climb that, and you come out to the plateau. Now, all around the plateau are big mountains. There is desert. There is rolling hills. But the plateau is as flat as a pancake. And on the edge, it has all these rocks, like Stonehenge, all in a row. They're about 7-8 feet high. And it's completely flat. Now, we took all the stones off the surface, but if you dig in the side of the bank there, like I says, there's geodes, thunder eggs, fire opal, fire agate, crystals, things like that. And after we came back in 63 to stay here, we opened up Aztec Film Productions. I went to school, took up cinematography, and we were doing commercials and open heart surgery shows and stuff like that on 16mm for the university. And when things were slack for a month or two, bingo, all four of us be out in the hills.
Uh-huh.
We just close up and run. Now, getting back to that crazy plateau, we moved camp from Murphy to a place called Clifford Wells, that would be closer to water. And one night, we're sitting in the Jeep, with face toward the mountains, to McCaughrey's. It was about 8:05, and Chuck says, "Look." And coming out of the sky was two big balls of light, real slow. They weren't flares, they weren't comets, there was no planes flying over. And they disappeared in the area of the plateau. The next night, exactly the same time, Chuck says again, "Look it," and things were back again. Two big balls at arm's length. They were about half the size of a dime, I guess. And they went down in the same place. Chuck says, "Oh, my God." But Roy Walt wasn't with us at that time. They were off in Yuma looking for something for a month or two. They would come back. Chuck and I drove overland for about 5 miles and then hiked into the mountains, which is a nightmare. I mean, you get in there, that place is out to kill you. You got to know where you're putting your feet. You got to know where you're putting your hands. You don't get hit by a rattler who's sitting under a shady ledge.
Mm-hmm.
Went back there, there was no burned holes, nothing. When Jerry went out there, he had a map to show that had to call ley lines, and they all stopped right by the plateau.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he saw all the quartz and the geodes and everything laying around. And he got a couple of interesting readings off this new archway that had appeared. I'll get back to that in a minute. And these two young mechanics that I knew, they begged me to tell them where it was. I said, "Don't tell anyone." They went up there for a day or a weekend or something, came back, And they showed me this picture, this gigantic archway. It looks like a big snake coming out of the ground, and its head is resting on a rough-looking column, and it comes to a point, and there's an eye, a big round circle for an eye. I says, where the devil you find that? He says, just east of the plateau. I says, no way. The four of us cover that area back and forth for 4 or 5 miles. But he had pictures. I couldn't believe it. Where did it come from? That's the mystery. So they go up there 2 or 3 times a year, and it's still there. I says, you go up there, that thing's gone. I says, you stepped into another dimension.
All right, so this is an area that you had already explored, and this archway was not there back when you explored.
It was not there. The last time I was up there was in the late 70s, and what had happened, the original archway was about 3-4 feet wide and maybe 7 feet high, and the top half had collapsed. And I go back in a year or so, and the small one started crumbling. They can't even find where the columns are. It disappeared. And this other one took its place, and they had the picture, and I couldn't believe it. I said, it was not there. So there's another mystery. So with all these crystals and ley lines and the magnetic flow of the Earth and everything, something happens. It's a freak of nature. When everything comes together and you're there, you see things of the past, never the future. Like when Louis was up there with one of the cowboys and the Indian that disappeared, you know, mm-hmm. never was seen again. They were south, I think, by this big mountain, I call it, Bullet Head. And they came across the skeleton, minus the head, minus one leg, had an old moccasin on, had some broken arrows laying around and stuff. It looked like an old Indian that maybe had been dead there for a year or less. And they dug a hole and buried it. And it was in the area of the archway again. See what crazy place it is? Now, this guy might have been teleported into the future, went back to the ranch, I mean, to the village. There's no village there. He sees planes flying overhead. I guess he went wacko and died. Because that'd be awful strange, you know. Mm-hmm. To him, it looked like that his buddies had disappeared.
Okay, so let me ask you a question.
In 100 years.
All right, so this Indian body that they are, skeleton that they found, and they found a bunch of broken arrows and some arrowheads.
And a moccasin on one leg in the skull was missing. And there were bits of hard leather laid around, which could have been from a loincloth or something.
All right. Now, what year was it when they found this?
He found that. Let's see. We came down in 56. I think he found that, if my memory is right, somewhere around 44 or 45.
Uh-huh.
But he, at that time, he still didn't know the stories. He had heard the stories, but there was no connection to the archway. Until people started disappearing, you know, and sights being seen and the whole thing. And then if you go east a few miles, you come to this crazy wall that was built. That thing starts 6 inches high on the edge of the mesa, and it starts winding its way east, getting bigger and bigger till it's 5-6 feet high. And from an aerial shot, it almost looks like a snake. Now, who would go out there and move all the rocks? The big rock went to this big boulder, and then it dog-legged up the hill. Now what it looks like, it's been moved away from the rock, and it's straight. I have pictures of it, and then it goes up the hill. Now someone went up there for some reason, started moving the whole wall out, and it was big, and put together with flat rocks. It wasn't just a pile of stones, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a regular wall about... Oh, one section is about 3.5 feet, and it jumps up to about 4 or 5 feet. And no one would build it to live up there. There's a solid rock. There's no water. So there's a connection there. So all the stuff, I believe, is coming together. That maybe Indians knew more than they ever told even old John about this crazy archway.
All right, now this archway was somewhat of a sacred site for the the Native American tribes that lived up there. And this is an area, everybody in the audience, worldwide, I know you've heard of Geronimo. Well, Geronimo, this was his area. This is where he lived and operated, in this area. Who are some of the other chiefs that operated in this area?
There was Cochise was here, and Geronimo, and there was that other one, Natchez, I think, and a few other ones, but mostly Geronimo.
Uh-huh.
He came from here, clear over to Skeleton Canyon, over in Cochise Canyon, and all over where Wilcox is and Benson. That was all his stamping grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd fly into Mexico and make a raid on the Mexicans, then he'd fly back across the border again.
Mm-hmm. But when these chiefs would meet, I have been told, or at least I understand it this way, that one of the sacred spots where the chiefs would meet would be at this archway.
Mm-hmm. A small one could have been built, but not this big one. This thing is 10 feet high and 18, 19 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's attached to the rock. It's almost solid rock up there. You can see where the both ends were attached right to the rock. It wasn't like it was made and pulled in there.
Uh-huh.
It's a strange place. Even that crazy wall where I brought several people up there, when the four of us found it in 57, we took pictures of it, and by then we were good friends with Louis Romero. And I said, "Say, Louis," I said, "who built that wall over there by Sardina Peak?" He said, "What wall?" And I told him about it. "Hey, there's no wall there." I said, "Yeah, but you're a cowboy. You've been riding down in the flats where the cattle are, not up on top of these mountain peaks." So I said, "We took some pictures of him." So gave it to a guy in Arivaca who was going into town. He had them developed and picked them up for us. Next time he came out, we showed him to Louis. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. He said, "I've never heard of this wall." And so I brought two people up there, and we walked around for a while and watching them, and they said the same thing as those kids. They said, "Ron, this is a strange place." He says, I get a feeling that we're being watched. He says, it's so quiet. It's just not a sound. I says, "Yeah, just like my trip up to the archway." Well, I'll tell you that in a minute.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we will return, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking this evening with a most fascinating man by the name of Ron Quinn. Ron, we sort of had to cut you off in mid-sentence there because the break
That's
was
okay.
taking over. Just pick up where you were and let's move forward.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when I was up there, the story I heard from other people. Now, what I'm about to tell you is the God's truth. I don't make up stories. I write them the way I hear them. And if they're campfire legends, I let them know. If it's a treasure story that's not true, I let them know. Now, what happened to me is a very strange thing. In the 70s, I went up there by myself. I was 72 or 76. I hadn't been up there in quite some time. Now, you go up this long, narrow canyon. You get toward the end. It makes an abrupt 90-degree turn. Then you go upside the hill, you end up on top of the plateau. Now, it's a long, tedious climb, so you have to rest. So I went up it, where it made that abrupt turn, I went straight up the embankment, and I was pooped out a bit. So I sat down facing north. Remember this now. I want to see what your listeners think about it. So I'm sitting there looking north, and on both sides of the canyon are high cliffs, the little spots where you can sit. So I'm just sitting there looking north, you know, take a drink of water from the canteen. And all of a sudden, I look to the left, and down there is a canyon. And I'm saying, there's no canyon there. The one in front of me comes right towards you that makes that turn. You know, you come straight on up, and you're looking down the canyon from on top of the plateau. I says, what's this canyon doing here? So I